Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Can't get over the fact we're on series 13 of Food for Thought. It really does go to show that it's popular to learn more about your health, about your body, your mind. And I can't thank you enough for the support over the years. It's been absolutely incredible. And to come back with another jam-packed series, I'm buzzing for this one. We've got so many fascinating topics and I know you'll love it. For those of you that may not know me, let me introduce myself. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, a registered nutritionist. I'm now a Sunday Times best-selling author of The Science of Nutrition. Do check out my new book. I think it will help a lot of people out there. And I'm founder of Retrition, which is one of London's leading private nutrition clinics. So we help all of our clients on a one-to-one basis in a variety of different areas. Now, over the next 12 weeks, my expert guests and I's aim is to expose why so much advice can often be misleading and harness you with the truth. So we'll be using proven science to sort fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. Through my experience in the Retrition Clinic, I've come to learn just how widespread pseudoscience is. It's everywhere. But I'm betting on the opposite approach, the cold, hard facts. And my ethos is simply to embrace a healthy way of living through the food that we enjoy and the life we lead. So this week's Food for Thought, we're doing things a little differently. I'm so excited for this episode. I have health journalist Jenny Francis, and she is going to be interviewing me on all things nutrition and exploring the latest evidence-based advice, which is in my new book, The Science of Nutrition. Hello, Jenny.
Hello, Ree. How are you?
It's so nice to hear you virtually. It's just so strange. I haven't seen you in, I can officially say, years now, which is madness. But thank you so much for interviewing me today.
No worries. It's been wonderful. I mean, I've listened to you since you began on podcasts, and you've been my go-to expert on nutrition stories for years. So It's such a pleasure to be able to come on and talk to you about your amazing new book.
Thanks, hon. Yeah, so The Science of Nutrition out now. I can't actually believe it.
Yeah, does it feel strange to kind of see it out? Because it must be a long passion project for you.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I think I must have messaged you during the time when I was writing it. It was just so hard. I think because I obviously had a baby and it was the pandemic, it was working from home with everyone in the house and no childcare for a long time. So I was trying to, you couldn't really get your teeth stuck into it how I wanted at first, because I was trying to do the work during the 2 hour nap in the day and then the other half an hour nap and then bed. But eventually, yeah, I have to say it's the best thing I think I've ever written. So yeah, I am very proud of it.
You should be so proud of it. I mean, I kind of want to start with a question. It's just a personal question I really want to ask is that, you know, it's so weird now is that it's not that we don't have access to information about nutrition anymore. You know, that in fact, there's the sheer amount of it is huge. But the hardest part for us all who don't know about nutrition is knowing what to believe. You know, this increasing level of misinformation out there. Is that what encouraged you to kind of go back to a title like The Science of Nutrition?
Yeah, you're right. It's the overwhelming amount, more so. So when I started in this industry, it was more that there weren't enough people speaking from an evidence-based platform, whereas now people have kind of cottoned on to these phrases like, oh, evidence-based, and this is scientific, or here's a study to suggest X, Y, Z, but they're, it's not correct because it's used out of context. There's so much pseudoscience online. If you cherry pick one study, there will be a for and against everything in the world if you look hard enough. It's about knowing how to read the literature. And I think that's where we get a rise of misinformation from. We get online health gurus thinking that, I guess, because they've read something that that's correct, without a deeper understanding that we don't have all the answers. And that's why I did want to call it the science of nutrition, to remind people it's a science. It's not, nutrition isn't just what you eat every day. It's understanding every fundamental aspect of it in terms of the fact that we don't know everything, and it's a very new science. So yeah, this book hopefully debunks everything in terms of diet myths, and it will educate people from the get-go on every conceivable question that you're probably confused about. That's the goal of this book.
Yeah, and I think like the word science can sometimes like scare people. Oh God, I don't want to know the science of nutrition. I just want to know the basics. But that's what this book does, and that's what it's done for me, is that it has made it more simple, and it's gone back to facts when there is so much misinformation out there. Because I think sometimes we mortals who aren't nutritionists, you know, we can get a bad rep if we make a wrong decision with our nutrition, or we believe something that we hear, and people kind, you know, you can feel silly, can't you? But I think the book doesn't, you know, it does the opposite of make you feel that. It really strips it back. It's not like a big scientific manual where you think you don't know what you're doing. It's actually really simple basics, and that's what helps you then understand the fundamentals. That's what I felt when, I mean, I haven't read the whole thing yet, I'm about halfway, but you know, that's what it did for me. And I think that's really empowering for people who want to know about nutrition, who are just normally like, you know, so scared of saying the wrong thing about food these days or making the wrong choice.
There was no middle ground, like you've just said. I was asked for years, I mean, when I released Renourish in 2017, that was kind of a starting point, but again, that was quite I would say general and broad, and I wanted the opportunity to be an in-between, a textbook. Like you said, there was only nutrition textbooks for people that were studying at like degree level, or you've got the typical, here I am holding a bowl of food, here's a load of recipes, and here's a little bit of information about nutrition. There was no middle line, and I wanted something that was accessible. Oh, I'm so passionate about it. Sorry, I'm going off on one. But yeah, basically, this is like an encyclopedia that's going to help everybody in a really easy, accessible way that does teach you the science in a way, because I don't think we should be dumbing it down for people. I think everyone wants to learn. It's just the fact that it doesn't have to be nutritional jargon just for scientists. We can word it differently so it appeals to everyone.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I mean, if no one's seen it, it's kind of a coffee table book. You know, you haven't put it into like, it's not like a novel where you have to start at the start and read it, you know, page by page and get through the whole thing. It's something that, you know, if you open the page on carbs and you're someone who just knows a lot about macronutrients, you can skip that and get to the, you know, it's very much something you can pick up, put down. You know, if you had that on a coffee table, one of your friends might be like, oh, interesting, open it up, find a fact, close it. It's very, you know, you can come back to it, which I also really liked, because sometimes I think when I see, you know, there's books and I think, oh, I've got to start, that's a lot to get through. This doesn't feel like that. Was that a conscious decision to format it like that?
Absolutely. Questions and answers. I mean, it's because I feel that the only reason you'd open a book like that was if you were to have a question like, well, what is metabolism in the first place? You know, like, can I actually eat to boost my immunity? What is gut health? Like, is there a link between my mental health and the food I eat? And they're all questions that I answer in the book, like, what is the best diet in the world? Those are questions that I know people will ask or think of. Mm. And that's how I formatted the book, in a Q&A format. So every page has a title with a question at the top, and then I break it down. So you've been given the answer or the facts, rather than some long-winded thing you have to decipher through a whole book to kind of get to the bottom of.
Yeah, and it's really beautiful. You should be really proud of it. Like, the design looks great. It's really appealing to read. It's like, it's really nice. It kind of feels, you know, like each page has got images or like diagrams. And I personally think that was great. And it's this nice thing to read. But I find that interesting there. I might just even ask you this question, because I feel like I know, but if you had to say to me right now, what is nutrition, Ree? How would you define it?
I think I define nutrition as just learning how to eat well nowadays, because it's lost its initial meaning. Just like the word diet now means restriction or weight loss instead of meaning, you know, all the food you put into your body. I would say nutrition means just making sure that you're optimally healthy, that you eat well. That is the key phrase here, because it definitely shouldn't mean trends and fads. And just eating greens. And a lot of people put the word nutrition and restriction together. And it's not what it's about. It's about what you put in, not what you take out, 100%.
It's interesting you say that about words, actually, because, you know, I write about, you know, diets a lot. But then there has been that huge thing where I didn't want to use the word diet for so long because people immediately thought it meant weight loss. So then I started using the word nutrition instead. And now it's like, should you, do you know what I mean? It's one of those things where the word can become demonized so quickly.
Yes.
But it's, again, is that why you wanted to always go back to the science of it?
Yeah, like I think, for instance, people may just think nutrition is vitamins and minerals, but I think it's understanding that it's so much more than just a black and white answer of yes, there are, you know, 12 different B vitamins, or, you know, there's lots of different alphabetical letters for vitamins and minerals, and you have to eat a certain amount every day. But actually, we don't know that for certain, because we don't know how much you need as a unique individual. These are rough guidelines, and it's very vague, like you say, and people can interpret it in a whole array of ways. A lot of it's emotional connection that I think people are brought up with, and what they see nutrition as. I talk about that in my TEDx talk, actually, on how people see the world of food. Food is emotive, and therefore nutritional science becomes an emotive science, which people talk about and get quite passionate about. And sometimes you can lose the underlying meaning, which is just to eat well, like I said, rather than taking it in their own perspective.
It's interesting then what you said, and I did want to ask you this, like, different people feel different things towards food. And I definitely noticed it, because I talk a lot about, you know, nutrition to different people. I'm a personal trainer, so people ask me questions about food a lot, which I'm always like, I'm not a nutritionist. But different generations have different questions about food and what to eat. And I find that really interesting. And you must see this with your clients all the time, that, you know, if I said to my nan, what is nutrition? And I asked my mum or my little sister, what is nutrition? I would get a different answer from all of them over those different generations. Do you experience this with your clients quite dramatically?
100% in the clinic, 100%. This is why we have an hour and lots of sessions, hopefully. I mean, it can depend. Some people may only need one, some may need many. But this is why you need to take the time to get to know a person, understand their beliefs, their thoughts, their processes. It's heavily psychological in the initial consultation, because you're getting a background, a health history. And there are some generations that have been brought up in the era of, you know, fat is bad, or, and I believe actually we're currently living in an era where calorie counting is on the verge, and give it 30 years, we'll look back on calorie counting and think, what on earth were we thinking? Just like with the fat era. That's how I see the future of, food, in a way, that we're learning so much more now that we've oversimplified it completely. Because we had to, for public health messages, but it hasn't worked, and it's confused people and created a very disordered space, because everybody has a different feeling around it. I think even just acknowledging that, like you've just said, if you spoke to your grandma, you know, meat and two veg, or I was doing, what was I speaking about yesterday? It was on social media, and I was talking about different cultures around the world. Like, some religions believe you shouldn't pair meat and dairy together. And then if you went to Italy and had a seafood pasta, they'd never dream of adding Parmesan cheese. And every culture has their own way of seeing what how food should be eaten and what it actually means. So we just have to embrace that and just acknowledge that everybody's different, because we all see it so differently.
Definitely talking about it more and say it in, like, you know, acknowledging, because I don't think a lot of us even realize what our things about food are. If you said to me, like, what's yours, I'd be like, well, I don't have any, but of course I do, you know. I've born in the 80s, so I'm in carbs are bad kind of era, I guess. That sort of thing. And maybe then into the calorie counting side, whereas my mum's and dad are very much probably fat is bad. And then, you know, it's and then I think even grandparents, it was all about portion sizes, not about what you were eating. It was about how much you were eating. And that's just even thinking, gosh, what have I been taught in my generation? And then acknowledging that could be super powerful.
100%, so powerful. And it's just so confusing. And I think the way you mentioned language earlier as well, the sense that some people view metabolism as being, you know, your weight, referring to how fast your body burns food, whereas actually it's just a simple word for chemical reactions in the body. It just takes place to keep us alive, literally. And of course, the food we eat provides the energy we need to even fuel the metabolism in the first place. But that word is thrown about over the last, I'd say, few decades and means a complete different thing in every other decade into how we describe it and what terms we use it with. And it's, I would say a lot of it's actually what we call diet culture when it comes to talk about food. You know, there's some generations that believe, like you said, portion control or skipping a meal in the morning is something that actually, I know I've got people in my family, relatives that have done that for years before it even became a dietary trend of fasting, because that's what they did, rightly or wrongly, to control their body image and their weight. And they didn't have any understanding of why they were doing it. It was just the dumb thing. So yeah, we're learning a hell of a lot more now, which is exciting.
Oh yeah, and like, you know, as a health and fitness journalist, my job for years has been to like address the trends in nutrition, whatever comes out next, you know, like can we address this? And God, over the years, there's been a lot. Carbs are bad, fasting's good, charcoal tea, acai bowls, overnight oats, kale crisps. I mean, like, there's just all of these things. And, you know, I tend to hear of these via social media or via friends. But I'd love to know, do you sense these nutrition trends coming and going? Do you hear about them before we do? Like, you know, do you get a sense of when things are shifting or when certain weird trends are coming on?
It's such a good question. It's one that often I'm, so as a registered nutritionist now, I'm often rung once a year by a certain board that call quite a few dietitians and nutritionists in the UK to gauge how they felt the year has gone. So people that own businesses or have a footfall that's large enough to, you know, gain that kind of momentum on changes in dietary trends. And they ask for our opinions on things for a survey, which is taken every year. And I remember discussing fiber before gut health became a big thing. I remember discussing plant-based foods before suddenly the rise in plant-based diets took off. And at the moment, we're talking about kefir and different types of fermented foods. And again, like I said, I think the numbers thing and carbon footprints are going to be huge now. So people are going to want to become more aware eventually in the next, I'd say, 2 to 3 years of the carbon footprints of their food and where it's traveled from, because over the next few years, there's a big target for consumers to become more aware of where their food travels and where it comes from, in a push, obviously, for the planet, which I do have a section for on the book, a whole section on sustainability to explain what's happening in an easy way. But it is interesting, Jen. I do get to, I wouldn't say we always get it right. That's why they ask a collective of people and even scientists studying, you know, around the world to give their opinions. But I feel honoured to even contribute to these types of surveys. And
yeah,
it's interesting hearing what comes up in clinic, I guess, and on social media.
And it is really nice to know that they do that and with registered nutritionists. So they're sort of, you know, really trying to be ahead of the curve and that. That is quite, you know, nice to hear. I mean, when you do hear of, you know, so things like fiber and stuff's interesting. When you hear of, you know, things like the charcoal tea or I don't know, very specific.
I'd forgotten about the charcoal tea, you know. I'd forgotten until you brought it up. And I was like, oh, God, yeah, of course. That was awful. It was on every restaurant table, like a charcoal stick in a bottle of water.
Yeah. And like, you know, these things come out. I can't even think of all of them now. But when these kind of really specific things, like we were just saying, metabolism boosting or, I don't know, detoxifying things, and they come around, it's just a miracle food that apparently, you know, we've just been discovered. Do you get bored of it? Are you just like, oh, for goodness sake, another one? Or do you think, no, this is what, you know, I don't know, this is what I'm here to talk about. Let's look into it.
I mean, if I'm being honest, it's a mix of the two emotions, because one half of my brain is immensely frustrated that we're having to constantly talk about fads and things that are about restriction and things that are hailed as panaceas, you know, the miracle for everybody. And I get frustrated because I know it's not fair, and I know it makes money for certain companies and it preys on vulnerable people. Because let's face it, a lot of the work we do in the Retrition Clinic, and the reason I wrote this book, is because so many people are struggling. And like you said at the beginning, it's overwhelming, it's confusing. People want to have good health, they don't not want to be healthy. It's just hard to do it. So half of me is frustrated. And then I've got the motivational factor that you've just said, you know, the other side of my brain is going, right, bring it on. You know, I want to make a difference. I'm lucky I can. I've got a platform here. And, you know, me and you have done some wonderful features over the years. And I think of things and opportunities we've had, you know, like doing takeaway alternatives, demonstrating lower sugar or lower salt options. You can still eat delicious food. It doesn't have to be restrictive. So, yeah, I'm in 2 miles. Nutritionist. I mean, I've got a whole section in the book on debunking all these diet myths. I go into all of it, turmeric, which is huge in the winter months, and ginger, and what the facts are behind it, because everywhere I'm seeing these miracle claims surrounding shots of different foods. If only it were that simple that we could just take a shot a day or have a vitamin drip, which I don't agree with, but and that would cure everything, you know. It's sad.
I think
it's
that we all just want that miracle cure, don't we? Like, as much as we don't like to think we do, that's kind of what we all want. So when there is that whole, like, you know, some clever marketing person, you know, figures out the new buzzword and manages to say, oh, this is, you know, somehow they can say this is going to be the miracle thing shot you have. And it's so easy. We're so vulnerable to it because it's what we want. We just kind of want to believe it so badly that we do.
I mean, it's a basic understanding of food. Like, people, I'm taking a bet. A lot of my listeners wouldn't know the difference between a legume and a pulse, yet they would know what spirulina is, and they would have heard of, like you said, the charcoal drinks. And that, to me, just screams volumes, because, you know, a pulse is just the dried seed of a legume. Like, you know, you take a green bean, you take the bean out, the bean is the pulse, the whole green bean shoot is a legume, and that's what we need to be eating more of, yet we're not educated. That's why I've got a whole page on that as well in the book, but that's why, because we spend so much time in the media focusing on these things that just are not what nutrition's all about at all.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And that's actually like why the book and everything you do really is so great, because if once you get empowered by learning the basic science behind food and you spend the time to do that, when you see these trends, you're empowered to be like, hang on a minute, but I read this in Ree's book and that doesn't make sense, so that can't be right. You know, you've got that empowerment from knowing the basics and learning that you can then really, without even having to go ask you, you know, you can debunk those in your own mind, because you're like, that does not ring true to me.
Because I think people know, Jen, like, I think people treat the general public that are not obviously health professionals like imbeciles. And just being played, but you're not. Everyone listening, you are so smart and intelligent, and you know that a poor diet is probably one that's too high in salt, too high in sugar, and you're eating a lot of ultra processed foods. People know that now. You know, it's not rocket science. And this is why I obviously will cover elements of that, but I go into the details. I want people to know the confusion around, should we actually be eating less meat? Is meat and fish now not the same quality as it was before? Should I be eating, should I not? Is it bad? You know, what can we learn from people that eat over in Asia or in the Mediterranean? Why on earth is this happening in the world right now? What can I do about it? And I really delve into all of that and try and help people understand how to work on their gut bacteria and the link between their body weight And also nutrition's so much more than just weight, isn't it? It's about living a long, healthy life. What about dementia? Yeah. I discussed that, you know, eating to keep your brain healthy and wired, because I think there's too much focus as well on BMI and physical appearance. And BMI is not an accurate measure. It's actually very problematic at the moment.
And it's interesting that actually, because now more than ever with the pandemic and everything we've gone through, you know, nutrition and immunity is a fantastic trend, in my opinion. I mean, I could be wrong, but like the fact that people are thinking about their food aside from their body weight, aside from anything else, they're really thinking about maybe what I can eat can really help protect me and keep me really healthy. And that's something that I think is fantastic. I mean, maybe we can touch on that. How strong is that link between what we eat and our immunity and our health?
Oh, absolutely. And again, like you said, there will be those people that have made claims to do with immunity and diet, which are not correct because they're jumping on a bandwagon. So as listeners, you kind of have to put your investigator hat on and just think, right, what is a red flag? And a red flag is anyone that uses the claim you can boost your immunity through food, because you can't actually. You don't want to be boosting your immune response, because then your body goes into overdrive and you've got too many white blood cells circulating. It can actually be very dangerous. What you want to be doing is people that use the word support the immune system, and you can support it through your diet. And that means getting your key vitamins and minerals, getting your vitamin A, which supports the immune cell production, or vitamin B6. Now, there's lots of vitamin Bs, guys, by the way. There's like B1, B2, B6, B12. They've all got their different names, but they all play such an important role for processing antibodies, which are like our fighters in our body, which help fight away all the bad stuff. And it's getting your vitamin D supplement in, which I'm very passionate about in the winter months. We know that's linked to a reduced immune response. If you're not taking vitamin D, your immune system will be weaker. And then there's the key little micronutrients, the things like selenium, which you've probably heard of before. You can get it in Brazil nuts. That's the thing that most people tend to know about selenium. But that's involved in the production of the immune cells, so building them, which is absolutely mind-blowing. And zinc, and we've got, anyway, I'm not going to go through it all in here because it's fascinating,
isn't it, that we can really, you know, the things we eat, which is something we do every day anyway, so it's not adding to anything, it's just what we're eating, and just knowing again that we can really boost our immunity. This is something that you're not meant to say at all anymore about bad foods and good foods, which I totally understand. But my question to you is, are there bad foods? As in, these ultra processed foods that we're now more aware of and we're all talking about, we know they're not good for us. Are we allowed to call those bad foods, Rhiannon? Like, what? Do you know, I'm just interested in your opinion on it, because I feel strongly like I don't to demonize food and all of that. But I just keep hearing all these really negative things, and I don't hear anything positive about them. Right. Like, there's nothing other than the fact that sometimes they can taste delicious. What what are we saying about them?
Ultimate question. Thank you so much. And I think you've hit the nail on the head. For everybody listening, probably feels equally as frustrated. It's generational, because I think in terms of generations, how we describe food, that's what good and bad has come from. And there is logic behind it. So of course there's logic. We know that 70% of our immune system lives in our gut, including 80% of our body's what we call immunoglobulins, which are fighter, protecting type cells. So we know that what you eat has an impact on your gut health, has an impact on your immune response. Your immune response and your gut are practically together. So when we say bad foods, they're just foods that don't give you as much. So if someone's referring to a bad food, it's not that it's going to be bad for your body, because it will contain nutrition. If I take a burger, for example, a lot of ultra processed food here, but it will still contain protein, probably contain iron if you've got red meat in that burger, or if it's a plant-based burger, you might have some fiber. So all foods give you some sort of nourishment. It's just some foods are better than others at providing certain key elements. And the way the digestion works as well, our body doesn't recognize ultra processed foods in the same way that it does if you're cooking from scratch. We have that data now that you absorb 50% less energy if you cook from scratch versus consuming an ultra processed food. Yeah. So cheese sandwich is the example that I've probably spoken about before on this podcast, but using the American luscious ultra processed cheese, you know, they put in burgers that melts amazingly, versus cutting a slice of cheddar yourself at home probably and putting it with some bread that you may have just made, like a fresh sourdough loaf or some whole grain bread at home. You won't use all the energy because your body recognizes it differently. It's a lot of fiber in that as well. Whereas we've gone through so much processing to produce the packaged item that it's very quick to absorb into our bloodstream. So but then you've got the other debate that this is a public health and nutrition debate. Some people just can't afford to eat in a certain way. We've got huge discrepancies, socioeconomic discrepancies, in what people can and can't afford, what they enjoy. Having those items every now and again is great, but if you're in a position where you can afford to eat in a different way, then I would encourage you to try and get that kind of balance between ultra processed foods and cooking from scratch as much as you possibly can, or the quality of food you do consume, because there's no denying that, of course, the better the diet in that sense, the better for you. But it doesn't mean you'll be deficient in vitamins and minerals if you live off ultra processed foods. So does that kind of explain the difference?
Yeah, it does. And it's actually interesting to know that, you know, there is some goodness in pretty much everything we eat, even if it's ultra processed. I guess, like, I just hear things, you know, that really impacts our, that we become addicted to it. You know, some of the chemicals are bad for us, or you know, ultra refined sugars are just, they don't do anything good. And it confuses me because, you know, I eat a really healthy diet, but of course I'll have a takeaway every now and then, like most people, or, you know, but I try and balance it out. But then when I hear these things about, like, you know, just having one ultra processed meal is as bad for you as having a cigarette, or I don't know what claims I've seen, or as bad for you as drinking a bottle of wine, or I don't know. And I think, oh gosh, maybe I shouldn't, you know, maybe it's not just about that. So it's interesting to know that it's not necessarily that bad.
Yeah, it's a lot of scaremongering. I mean, these items wouldn't be allowed to be sold if they were that bad, if you see what I mean. I mean, they're heavily rigorously researched. They would not be out there. And it is just about the percentage of time you choose to consume them. And for some people, there's a genetic element here as well, and also epidemiology. And so I think it's Professor Tim Spector at King's College. He does a lot of research on different blood sugar responses to foods. And he's found that some people will respond completely differently to chocolate. Like someone, it may not even spike their blood sugar levels, whereas another person it would. So you've got individual unique differences to how you respond to food in the first place. And these scary toxic claims, I've actually got a whole section on marketing buzzwords and media words that are used in the book, just to clarify what they actually mean, because things can equally be marketed to sound healthy and they're not. You know, they can say it's natural, which doesn't mean anything. It literally does not mean it's natural at all. And to make these claims, you just have to reach certain criteria. But I feel you, Jen. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I get very passionate about that within the clinic. There's a lot of unpicking to do with our clients, just as I think this book will show people. You think, oh, hang on a minute, this is what I've believed my whole life, and I'm about to read something that's going to tell me that there's a different side to the story. How do I feel about that? And it's quite a lot to digest.
Yeah, good, a lot to digest. But also, I guess, like you were saying, it's your own personal decision then, isn't it? It's not like you don't read the science of nutrition and come away with, like you were saying, I now know the perfect diet and I'm going to eat that. It's like you find out all the stuff, you look at what you like to eat, and then you make your own decisions based on it. But that's then your decisions, rather than just feeling like you're completely lost and you don't really know what you should be doing and you're just kind of eating whatever, you know. It's that whole make it personal to you, make it work for you. If you're in a family versus if you're living on your own, just all of that stuff, make it your personal choices.
Yeah, and if you are living, you know, on your own, or if you're susceptible to poor mental health as well, then you'll know that diet can actually play a role. So diet's got these other benefits and aspects to it with the choices you make. So you might be able to acknowledge, I don't feel my best today. Maybe it's because I haven't eaten in the way I usually do today. You know, I've had a work Christmas do, or I've had gingerbread men snacks for breakfast, which is what I did this morning. You know, there's all these sorts of things and you're like, why do I feel a bit sluggish? Oh, that's why. And there is a link between food and mental health. And, you know, there is a link between eating mindfully and how that impacts our digestion and how that impacts our mood every day. And I loved writing about all that research. It was so great to do. But it really is important to just be armed with knowledge, because like you said, you make the decision, you have the power to do something different. It's not going to be overnight, but over a period of time, you might actually notice it, and it's quite exciting.
It's really exciting. And also, like you say, I mean, eating is something we all do every day. There's not much else that, you know, we all do it every day, but we know so little about it. So it's so fascinating and exciting when you pick up a book like yours. And you kind of, you're like, well, I do all this. It's not like a whole new subject. You're like, I'm going to start something new in my life I've not done before. We eat it every day. You know, it's finding out about stuff that we're already doing, which I think that's really fascinating in itself, that, you know, we do it every day and we don't think about it. You know, I read a stat once about how much we just eat the same things all the time. We don't really go outside our comfort zone. I was like, that's not me. And then I was like, oh gosh, no, it is.
It is, because if you look at your shopping basket, exactly. It's yes. And we know now, this is why I think the future is moving away from calorie counting, Jen, because right. I think the future is about getting the most diversity you can in your diet in a time where we might have to decrease the variety we have on the shop shelves. And we're going to have to learn more, because we can't keep sustainably eating in the way we do, having mangoes out of season every year, you know, all these sorts of things we do. And it's sad but true that I do think times will change in the next decade or so. But if we learn that your veg every week is a carrot, a parsnip, some tomatoes, broccoli and peas or whatever, why don't you pick a different vegetable instead and just keep testing yourself each week and just learning that there's little things you can do. And it is, everybody will have a little thing. But equally, if this is becoming damaging to your mental health, like if this decision or conversation around food is overwhelming, you're causing you anxiety, just switch off for a while and forget about it, block it out and come back to it at a time when you're ready to deal with it. Because equally here, we have to remember that food should be enjoyed, and I think that can often get lost as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so going on from that, we've got some questions from your followers which I want to ask, and the first is really fantastic, from Henry, and he says, my girlfriend keeps telling me off when I snack. Is snacking actually bad for us? Now, I love this, because I think every couple tells each other off, and I mean, it's not tell my partner off for snacking, but I tell him off for some things he does to do with his nutrition. So, Henry, you know, is snacking actually bad for us, Bree?
Oh dear, Henry, I'm laughing, but I know what it can be like. No, of course it's not bad for you. I think it depends how frequently you're snacking, or what you're snacking on, if it's necessary or not. Sometimes it doesn't have to be necessary, but if it's become a habit that's not useful or not serving you, maybe it's one just to kind of rein back on a little bit for some people. Other people need to snack all the time because their blood sugar levels drop so low. So it really is about your unique response to food. But try picking sensible snacks, or something with a bit of protein, maybe a bit of carbohydrate or fiber for energy, rather than, like I did this morning, the gingerbread biscuit or something. Try and go for, I don't know, an apple and some nuts, just something a bit more nutritious.
So is it like, when it comes to snacks though, and I'm jumping on Henry's question here, but is it that the actual, is more what snack we choose, or is the actual act of snacking in between meals bad for us?
No, so there's a big misconception that it's really bad for your gut. This is an individual response to food. So it really depends on how your digestion ticks, which is something that obviously I can't know across the podcast until I work with someone in the clinic. Yeah. But you'll figure it out if you're not experiencing good poos every day and you're constantly feeling bloated maybe, or you've got digestive discomfort, then we need to figure out if there's something going on there. We've got a gut health section in the Retrition Clinic where we do this a lot. But for some people, it's just the sensible choices. Like if it's going to keep you going between breakfast and lunch, have a mid-morning snack, and the same in the evening. I think the time where most people actually need to snack is if they ate lunch at 12 and they don't have dinner till they get home at 7 or 8. Often they'll make poorer choices at dinner because they're so hungry. So having a snack around 4 o'clock, something sensible, like a yogurt, or like I said, a piece of fruit or a homemade oat bar, even a bit of leftovers from lunch. You could have an egg muffin you've got left over or something. That is going to keep your blood sugar levels steady, keep your productivity higher, and enable you to eat maybe less at dinner or a healthier dinner if you're someone that tends to overeat in the evening. So there's lots of angles to look at snacking with, actually.
Yeah, you just hit my, that's 4 o'clock is my prime snacking time. It's like every, it's like an alarm goes off. I'm like, God, I'm hungry. Look at the time. It's pretty much bang on four every day.
Yeah, me
it's
too.
So weird.
I know. I feel like I eat dinner at four, to be honest, sometimes.
Yeah. And secondly, Millie, she says, I'm terrible with portion sizes. What is the right amount to aim for at each mealtime? This is interesting because I think we know now, but do we actually?
So in terms of portion sizes, I think people are getting better. It's very difficult when you're out at a restaurant, which is where maybe you should just let it go, or if you've bought a ready meal, but I have a page on the book on how to really work this out. And I often use hand-sized portions as rough guides for carbohydrates and proteins and how much veg should be on your plate. But if you look at the Eat Well guide and the Eat Well plate, it will tell you, you know, a third of your plate should be X and a quarter should be Y. And have a look at these different images and then really get a feel for, as long as your plate has your carbs, your protein and a lot of veg on there, that's probably a good balance. Because sometimes it can be very carb heavy, so the whole plate might be full of pasta and you've got a tiny bit of pasta sauce, which occasionally is fine. But like I said, if you're looking at this every single day, it's probably not the best choice. So you need to make sure you've got the balance there to be optimally healthy.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, it's time for fact or fiction. I feel like I'm on a game show. Fact or fiction.
You're very good, Jen. You should, you're very good. You should definitely have a show.
So let's just reel through these because I love these sort of quick fire things. So let's go for it. Nutritional choices won't affect how you age.
Fiction, because actually there is more research than not now pointing towards the impact on your brain and your skin and your muscle, even your bone density, you know, like osteoporosis. Anyway, yes, fiction.
Okay. Caffeine has no health benefits.
Fiction. Although sometimes for some people that would be a fact, because it just doesn't enhance their quality of life. It just won't work for them. But for some people, it might really help with productivity. It can relax them. There's research for and against caffeine. But overwhelmingly, I would have to say that fiction, because it does have some benefits.
Thank goodness, you would have broken my heart if you'd have said fact.
I know.
Okay, stress can cause you to bloat.
Fact, because it disrupts the digestive process, which can in turn trigger a bit more bloated. It's one of the most common things in the clinic, that, and often it's not the diet stress. Yeah, all the time.
Everyone should try to lower the FODMAP. Everyone should try the low FODMAP diet.
No, fiction. Absolutely not. Highly restrictive. Only should be done with a health professional or a registered dietitian. Absolutely not.
Amazing. You should aim to eat 30 plants a week.
So fact, and I get this sounds really overwhelming, but we're including things like herbs and spices here that can count towards your points. So, you know, just chucking a little bit of the turmeric, even if the benefits aren't whatever, or the herbs, it's all good for your gut. So yeah, as much variety, fact.
Wow, 30. Six, exercising is the quickest way to lose weight.
Fiction. Mm. You'll have to read the book for more of a summary on that one.
Seven, being slim is always healthy.
Fiction, definitely not. You can be slim and be very unhealthy. It's a huge misconception, because often if you're overweight, a lot of the attention is focused on that. But actually, all sizes and shapes, you cannot be a healthy individual.
Diets don't work.
Fact, in the sense the word diet is a trend restrictive time placed unrealistic thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can only get vitamin D from the sun.
Fiction, you can get good supplements these days. Definitely in the winter months, get your 10 micrograms in.
Amazing. And finally, iron deficiency is the most common nutritional deficiency.
Oh gosh, this, you probably pulled this from my book and I can't even remember if it's the most common one. I know. I'm going to say that it definitely would be a fact. It is probably most likely one of the most common ones, I think. Because it's one of the most common ones for teenage girls and for women in the UK. So based on the fact that 51% of the population are female and 50% are male, I'm going to say that's a fact. And we'll have to read my book to see if I was right or wrong.
You're very diplomatic at the end. It's the one that I always hear about. Yeah. So if that's it. I mean, iron deficiency seems to be the big one that people talk about. So fantastic. Well, there we go. Fact or fiction completed. Well done.
Oh my gosh. Thanks, Jen. Oh, I've loved this conversation. I'm so sad because that means we wrap up the episode. And it's honestly been such an amazing conversation. I can't thank you enough for leading me through it. I think now we normally both finish with our take-home messages, our food for thought. So do you have a take-home message, Jen, that after chatting with me today, that you have anything you think our listeners would benefit from?
Yeah, I mean, really, every time I speak to you, it just makes me relax when I think about nutrition. I think, you know, I work out a lot and I can overthink, you know, am I getting enough protein? Am I getting enough of this? Is this going to affect my sleep? You know, sometimes I can get a little overwhelmed with it. And I think when I speak to you and I listen to what you say, it kind of makes me relax more and think, you know, we're all on this learning journey together. As long as we're doing the most we can, don't over worry about anything. You know, the way you talk about things, you know, even ultra processed food, you know, okay, we shouldn't have it all the time, but it's not gonna, you're not gonna drop down dead the minute you eat one thing. And I think, like, I every time I speak to you, it makes me chill out a lot more. And I just think, gosh, yeah, you know, we're all navigating this together, we're all doing the best we can. And if we just try and remember these things, you know, remember things about nutrition as we go through our day, it can benefit us. And that's it for me. It makes me feel like much more relaxed and happy about my choices every time I speak to you. And I think that's a really positive thing for me.
Oh, gee, that's quite emotional. I was grinning here. That's so lovely, Jenny. I'm honestly, that makes me so happy. I think, I hope that's what everyone gets from the Food for Thought podcast. Oh. And I really, again, it's, yeah, I hope that you can all enjoy the book, The Science of Nutrition, in the way that, you know, I've enjoyed the hours and hours of research that has gone into it, because, you know, ultimately it does cover, I just want to help, basically. And it gets to the point, remember I said earlier in the episode where 50% of my brain is frustrated with all the confusion and overwhelming things. And I'm not pretending I have all the answers, but what I can do is give everybody the tools to be able to make more decisions themselves rather than being sucked into these dietary traps. And yeah, I just hope this episode, the book, and I guess everything over nutrition will empower all of you to explore it all and equip yourselves with the knowledge, I guess. So yeah, Jenny, thank you so much for coming on Food for Thought today.
And absolutely loved it. It's been a really great excuse to catch up as well.
Do you know, it really has been a good natter. I miss it so much. And for everyone that's listening, where can they go to find out what you're up to at the moment? Because obviously you're not writing where you were before now.
Yeah, no, that's really kind. I mean, I have an Instagram, it's JennyFrancis23. I mean, I'm all about, I love the exercise, but you know, all about kind of moving your body. And I'm working with a few really interesting people in the new year, training Frankie Bridge and Lucy Mecklenburg. So if you're interested in them and how they keep themselves like fit and happy and healthy, then yeah, head over to my Instagram.
So exciting. Thank you, Jen. And for everyone listening, The Science of Nutrition is available everywhere, I think. Every bookstore, hopefully most countries by this point, this episode's out. And if you would like to leave a review, let me know how you got on Amazon. If you've purchased there, that would mean the absolute world, so I can actually hear that. I hope it's doing what it should be doing. Jenny, thank you so much for coming on Food for Thought.
So welcome. Go and buy her book. It's amazing.
Thank you. If you've all enjoyed Food for Thought, you're going to love what's coming up. We've got so many amazing episodes. So if you're not already, make sure you subscribe, because that way it will just pop up and tell you it's ready for you to listen to every single Monday. And it would be brilliant if you have time to leave a review. I know now and understand that these reviews of how you feel the podcast goes, or if you learn anything from it, can help other people reach it, and hopefully they'll be able to take a lot away from it too. So for more information about my best-selling book, The Science of Nutrition, please do let me know if you've got your copy. The Nutrition Clinic, if you want to book in and get some advice, healthy recipes, and so much more, please go and visit Nutrition.com. And you can follow me at Nutrition on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.